Welcome, everyone, to episode 16 of True Crime All the Time. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what's the word?
What's happening, man?
Not much. Ready to do this great story we've got picked out for everybody.
It's a great story, but it's a sick one.
It is sick.
It really is.
I mean, we come up with some of the sicker ones, and this is one of the sickest ones. We say that a lot, but
I know
it's like we keep topping.
It's pretty sick.
In the sickness level.
Yeah.
Somehow. You know, got to give a shout out to a couple new supporters of the show. Marcy is our newest Patreon supporter, so big thanks goes out to Marcy. And also a thank you to Samantha. She actually made a contribution through PayPal.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you both.
Yeah, thanks to both of you very much. As always, visit our website at truecrimeallthetime.com. You'll find all of our contact information, social media, email, voicemail. We haven't had a voicemail in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So if anybody wants to throw one out there.
Lindsay, last one we had.
We'll play it. It probably was Lindsay.
Yeah.
You can support the show at patreon.com/truecrimeallthetime or through PayPal like Samantha did. And definitely don't forget about our new podcast, True Crime All the Time Unsolved. If you haven't checked it out, if you haven't subscribed, definitely do that. You know, it's the same format as this one, as True Crime All the Time. The only difference is we pick unsolved cases. That's the only difference. Hey, folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime, and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. All right, Gibby. So today we are talking about David Parker Ray.
Yeah. What's his nickname, Mike?
The Toy Box Killer.
Mm-hmm.
That one kind of jumped out at me.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's was a serial rapist and suspected serial killer. And there again, we'll cover why we're using the word suspected as we go along. But, you know, his crimes probably spanned 40 years.
Yeah.
Went undetected for 40 years.
Because they estimate what? How many?
As many as 60, I've seen. 60
victims.
Suspected, we're saying suspected because technically they never found any bodies.
Right.
Which, you know, it's kind of hard to... You know, we know it's hard to convict murder.
Right, without the body.
Without a body. It can be done, but it becomes harder.
It's pretty strong evidence.
Oh, there was a lot of evidence, and, you know, we'll go through that. You know, and also he was accused by his accomplices of killing people and suspected by police, like as we said, to have murdered as many as 60 people. In both Arizona and New Mexico.
Yeah.
So as we start, you know, I want to play this clip of David Parker Ray.
I get my excitement from making a woman happy. My trailer had numerous sex toys in it of different types, all different fetishes. I got pleasure out of the woman getting pleasure. I did what they wanted me to do.
So,
yeah,
creepy. Right?
So I'm not sure they were that willing.
No, I'm calling BS on some of the stuff he's saying there.
Absolutely.
You know, he made it sound like he was
doing them a favor.
Yeah, doing these women a favor. And as we go along, everybody will see that definitely wasn't the case. You know, he mentions in there his trailer. And as we'll talk about, his trailer is what he called his toy box.
Yeah.
And that's how he got the nickname, the toy box killer.
The $100,000 toy box, or the somebody else describes it as the $100,000 torture dungeon. Just the pictures I saw alone freaked me out, man.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, if you go online and look at, there is a lot of pictures of the trailer. So let's talk about David Parker Ray's early life. There's not a ton that's known. You know, a lot of times on these episodes, we have a lot of information, but there wasn't a whole lot. We do know he was born in November of 1939 in a place called, I'm going to call it Belen, New Mexico, or Balin. Somebody's going to correct me, but that's okay. You know, as a child, he lived with his grandfather, but he still saw his father. I don't know where his mother was in this whole picture, but he had contact with his father. But apparently his father was a mean guy and beat him.
Yeah. So was his grandfather.
Yeah. And his grandfather wasn't the best guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, he grew up with that. He had a younger sister, but they were split up pretty early, I think, when his grandmother died. You know, we talk about how people did in school a lot, and he did very poorly by all accounts.
Yeah.
And he was bullied.
I'll say he was picked on, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's picked on a lot in school. Talked about because he was shy around girls. Not sure why that's a reason to be picked on, but, you know, kids back then especially, you know, bullying's a big deal today. Back then, it wasn't, there was a lot of bullying that went
unreported.
Yes, unreported. Thank you. So, you know, when we get into his teenage years, Gibbs, you know, this is where he starts abusing alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And this
is. This cycle before.
Do what?
I've seen this cycle before.
Yeah. I mean, we see this a lot, right? Bad childhood mixed with abuse of alcohol and drugs.
Abusive family.
It's a, you know, like we said, it's around this time that his sister discovered some drawings that Ray had done. And these were not drawings that you would normally see associate with a teenager.
Right.
You know, we're talking about sadomasochism, erotic bondage. So at this point, at an early age, he's into some freaky
stuff. Not what you would have thought you would have found back in, gosh, would have been what, early 50s? Because he was born in 39, so, you know, think about that.
Yeah, so as a teenager, that would have been the 50s?
Yeah.
Even more strange back then, I
absolutely.
Think. Absolutely. Then it wouldn't be great today, but in the 50s.
It would have been for sure something more rare.
Yeah, that's definitely not Leave It to Beaver. So as Ray gets into adulthood, he gets a job as a mechanic, and he does some time in the military. And again, like you said, right? See, we've seen this before. Now, there was a lot of guys in the military back then. This is kind of paralleling Lake and Ing a little. And this story is very Lake and Ingish.
Yeah, it is.
That's a word I can
use. It's not, but we'll go
with it anyway.
Ferguson word.
You know, if you remember back to Lake and Ing, or if you haven't heard it, you know, they were both in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Now he apparently didn't, he didn't have any problems while he was in the military. You know, he got an honorable discharge. After the military, he was married four times.
Four times. Yeah, wow.
Each one ending in divorce. You know, out of those four marriages, he had two daughters.
Yeah.
One of the daughters he lived with for a period of time. So it's at some point after this that David Ray moves to Elephant Butte, New Mexico, which is pretty close to the town of Truth or Consequences, which I love that name.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
I haven't.
I'm shocked.
I know.
Every episode you say you've been to the place that we're talking about. So what about Truth or Consequences? Do you know anything about the name?
I don't.
Because obviously it's a weird name.
That is a weird name.
So apparently, and I'm sure I'm going to get some of these details wrong and somebody will correct me, but back in the 50s, there was a radio show called Truth or Consequences. They ran some kind of deal on the show that basically said the first town that would rename itself to be called Truth or Consequences, they would air the radio show on its 10th anniversary from this town.
Oh.
So I don't know how big of a deal it was, but this town called Hot Springs,
right,
which was its original name, I guess got together and said, hey, we'll do it.
Let's do it.
And they officially changed their name to Truth or Consequences. And so they did that 10th anniversary show, I think, from
Truth and Consequences.
Truth or Consequences. But also after that, the guy that did the show, apparently he would go there every year for like the next 50 years.
Out of guilt?
I don't know, out of something.
Made you change your name.
That he made them change their name.
So is it still the same?
Yeah, it's still Truth or Consequences.
Really?
I always just get a kick out of it because I like the name. So let's get into a little bit of the toy box nickname, right? Because, I mean, every time you see David Parker Ray, you will see the Toy Box Killer, right? So that was his nickname.
Right.
And I think you mentioned the fact that he had spent $100,000 to basically transform some type of, I don't know if it was a motorhome or it was a truck with a camper on it, but it was something like that.
It's an old mobile home.
Yeah. And he spent all of this money to transform the inside of this into a torture den. And apparently it had whips, chains, cattle prods, a gynecology chair.
Spreader bars,
whatever the hell that is. And just all kinds of other devices.
Yeah.
And most of them were for inducing some type of pain.
Right.
On his eventual victims.
Surgical, like steel tables and...
Yeah, and, just
all
kinds of weird stuff. I mean, well, think about it. I don't know when he spent this $100,000, but depending on what year it was, I mean, $100,000 is a lot of money today.
Oh, that'd be like spending $250 today.
Right. So whenever he did this, if it was 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
First of all, where the hell did he get $100,000? Yeah.
And where did he get all this equipment without somebody asking questions? Yeah. I mean, he had a lot of medical stuff in there. He even had a lower grade generator that he used to do a little shock treatment on his victims.
So Ray kidnaps his first victim by drugging her, gets her back to this motorhome or the toy box, as we'll call it, and basically proceeds to sexually assault her for a number of days without mercy, and he ultimately kills her. Now, we find this out much later, right? At the time, nobody knows any of this is going on. So he continues doing this for a while. Like we said, it's impossible to nail down the total number of victims.
Right.
Because number one, they haven't found the bodies. But eventually he brings in his girlfriend.
He does.
Cynthia Hendy. And Cindy Hendy, which is kind of hard to say. And she starts to help him in this crazy sexual fetish that he has.
Yeah, starts helping. She helps find the victims.
Yeah, she participates in a lot of the facets of these crimes.
Right.
And the two of them, along with some other accomplices that, you know, get brought in later, probably tortured at least 40 women. You know,
that's a lot
over some period of time,
a lot of victims,
and by all accounts, they made a number of snuff films to document what they were doing. And again, I mean, to me, that goes back to Lake and Ing.
Lake and Ing, right?
There are a lot of similarities between this story and the Lake and Ng one that we did. So one thing that Parker does is he makes a tape. And it's kind of a famous tape. It's really hard to find. I couldn't find the whole thing on the internet. What you can find is the transcripts, and there's a whole bunch of people that will read it, but it's not his voice.
Yeah.
But what I was able to find are a bunch of different snippets of him reading parts of it. So I want to play this because it's very important, and then we'll talk about it.
Your wrists and ankles are chained, and you're gagged, because you're not going to like the way I do it. You're going to be kept here, naked, and chained down. They say that I'm cold and compassionless. Then I treat people like I do objects, as a means to my own pleasure. And I suppose they're right to a certain extent.
You are expendable. It may sound harsh and cold, but I won't have any qualms at all about slicing your throat. You are obviously here against your will. You'll be raped thoroughly and repeatedly in every hole you've got. You're going to be kept like an animal. As far as I'm concerned, you're a pretty piece of meat. You're not going to remember a fucking thing about this little adventure. Be smart and be a survivor. Have a nice day.
All right, so...
Wow.
I mean, imagine that... You wake up after being drugged, probably. You're chained up in this toy box, and you have to listen. And from what I understand, this was a pretty long tape.
Oh yeah, I mean, I read the transcript of one, and I mean, it's very detailed.
It could have been 20, 30 minutes for all I know.
Oh, I think probably it was.
And so, my understanding is he would play this tape when the person that he had kidnapped would come around.
Yeah.
They would have to listen to this. I mean, just imagine the fear that person had to be experiencing at that point.
Sure. Not knowing where you're at, on a cold table, chained, looking around, seeing all the different objects around, wondering what's this about. And then hear that... That just his voice alone is creepy, but yeah. To hear what he says.
He said naked, which always freaks me out.
And that was some of the clean stuff that you could.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's just a small snippet of it, but
right.
You can imagine that most of the descriptions on the tape is much worse than what you just heard there. You know, most of the people that David Parker Ray and ultimately Cindy Hendy would help him out with, the most of the people that they would kidnap, they were sex workers, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, one of the ruses that he used was to pretend to be a police officer. And I think he even had like a badge that they would find later.
Yeah.
But he would kind of play like an undercover cop.
Right.
And would act like he was busting them for prostitution. And then he would take them back to the toy box. And that's when, you know, the bad stuff would start. They would hear the tape.
Yeah.
They would be tortured. You know, again, we talked about, I mean, this thing's filled with sex toys, surgical instruments, chains, pulleys,
saws.
You mentioned spreader bars, which I'm still not even sure what that is.
Yeah. Like spreader bars.
Yeah, probably that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about a gynecology table. And then, so to go with that, he mounted this big mirror.
Yeah.
On the top.
So they can watch.
Right. He wanted these victims to see everything that was being done to them. Yeah.
Unless he decided he didn't want, because sometimes he did this thing, he had this black box that he inserted their head in so that they could hear, but they couldn't see what was going to happen next. So again, he just did that to mess with them. So
just, a sick individual.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But, you know, like Lake and Ng, he recorded a lot of this torture.
Yeah, that's why, you know, you kind of wonder if did Lake and Ng, you know, find him fascinating or vice versa, you know?
Well, I think that's a good point, because you see, maybe not so much copycat, but you see serial killers either learning from other, you know, people that came before them, or,
right,
you know, maybe he always had, you know, we know he had these fascinations or these fetishes an early age. And it could be that sparked something in it if they came before him. But like we said, you know, he would record the torture, sometimes with just audio, sometimes with a video camera. And like many serial killers, because again, we're assuming, and by all accounts, people believe that he not only tortured these women, but he ultimately killed them. And I don't think that's much of a stretch to get to that conclusion, because if he was torturing and letting them all go, they would have spoken up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so where are all these women?
I mean, we know a few come out of the woodwork, right?
But the majority don't.
Yeah. So why is that?
Most likely because they were killed
exactly.
and dumped somewhere.
Because he says in his own tape, I will not hesitate to slit your throat.
Yeah. And I think he carried through with that
on
a lot of cases. But like I was going to say, like a lot of serial killers, he took trophies. And that is a hallmark that we see a lot.
It is.
You know, serial killers like to take trophies so that they can either relive the experiences, you know, whatever that trophy is, that brings back the
sexual
memory and fantasies. The sexual aspect of it later on. But he took clothing and jewelry and, you know, a lot of different things like that. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS. Now, it did say, Gibby, in there that there were a couple of victims that were let go.
Yeah.
And some of them we're going to talk about, but I think there were, I don't think he killed everybody. No. Well, we know he didn't kill a couple because they come forward. Right. I think there were some others because he did drug all these women. And from what I read, he had a cocktail that he thought was designed to basically cause amnesia. And so, you know, 2 or 3 days he's keeping this cocktail going, and then he lets some of these people go, and apparently they don't come forward, or they come forward and people don't believe them.
Yeah. You're going to probably talk about one down the road here.
One for sure. We know. Now we're going to, you know, like we talked about, Cindy Hendy is kind of a central figure in this case because she was Parker's girlfriend, and she also participated in a lot of these crimes. All right, Gibbs. So we know what Parker's doing, right? And he's been at this for some time. We don't really know all the victims because police don't know all the victims.
No.
So we can't, you know, go through them and do some of that we would normally do.
We just know what he likes.
Yes.
He talks about in his tapes when he goes on the search. He starts out on the high level trying to find attractive, well-built women first.
He has a type.
Yep, he has a type. Sure. And then he's willing to, as the night goes on, he's willing to drop his type down a little bit, but not too much. He'll come down a little bit. And then after that, if he can't get that, he won't just settle. So he talks about it in his tape. This is what I want, but I'm willing to go to this. And then that's it.
So if he doesn't find what he's looking for, he'll wait.
He'll wait.
But now we get to another central figure in the case, because this is the point where everything crumbles for David Parker Ray, right? So he goes out, and like we talked about, he uses this ruse of posing as an undercover police officer, and he approaches a woman named Cynthia Vigil. He told her she was under arrest for prostitution. I think he did this quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he handcuffs her.
He does.
So that's, again, I think he used that a lot, and that's how he was able to, number one, once you handcuff somebody, makes it a hell of a lot easier to get them in whatever vehicle you have and get them back to where you want to get them. And this is March 22nd of 1999, when Cynthia escapes from the toy box. So he had picked her up. He had held her for, 2 or 3 days?
About 3 days.
About 3 days. On the 22nd, she's able to escape. And the way she did it was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Because she'd been tortured for probably 3 days. And what she did is she waited for Ray to go to work. And when Ray was at work, it was Cindy that was in charge of looking after or making sure.
Cindy Hendy. Yep.
It was her job to make sure that the victims stayed put, I guess, for a lack of a better word. Cynthia, who's the victim here, is able to overpower Cindy, strikes her on the head with a lamp, tries to knock her out.
First, she was able, she did, what happened was, is that Cindy Hendy left the keys to the locks
on the table. Because right. That's because she had to get out of that first.
Right. Cindy Hendy made a mistake of leaving those out and visual, and Cynthia sees it, and she's able to undo the hand restraints.
Yeah. Thanks for correcting me, because you're absolutely right, because he kept them collared.
Shackled.
They got a collar. They're shackled.
Yeah.
I mean, this was not a comfortable situation
naked. Or so as he would say.
Even on top of all the torture, in between the torture, they were kept in, you know, all these shackles. It had to just been miserable. Oh, every part of it.
You know it had to be.
I mean, I can't even imagine. Mm-mm. Okay, so you're right. she gets the keys because Cindy's left them out. She's able to undo her restraints or shackles or whatever we call them.
Yeah.
And then that's when she strikes Cindy on the head with a lamp, tries to knock her out. She also stabs her in the neck at one point with an ice pick. Not sure why there's an ice pick laying around, but that could have been part of the torture for all we know.
Yeah, so Cynthia stabs Cindy Hendy in the neck with an ice pick.
Yes.
To try to, just to, like, you can just see the frustration, man. Oh. Like, yeah, it's my one chance to get out of here. I'm going to do whatever I can.
Yeah, I'm sure she was in complete panic, get away at all cost mode.
But how weird is that? An ice pick was hanging around.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Was it part of
the sick mobile?
Of the all the weird shit that he had in that toy box, or was it something that they used to serve Tom Collins? I don't know.
I'm going to go with the first.
Yeah, me too. So Cynthia, because it's weird because they're both named.
Right.
So Cynthia and Cindy. Cynthia's the victim. She's able to get away. But like you said, she's naked. She's got this iron collar around her neck and chains probably hanging off of her. She's unlocked the locks, but the chains are probably still on her.
Right.
And she's able to get away, and she makes it to a nearby mobile home. Knocks on the door. The owner lets her in. That must have been a sight.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
No.
I mean, you'd be like,
Lady shows up naked in a collar.
Yeah. Screaming, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure she was hysterical.
What would you think?
So the lady lets her in and calls 911. I want to play that right now.
Yes, I'm calling for a young lady that ran into the house and says she's just been raped. She's got a chain on her and everything. Send someone right away. This lady's naked and everything else. She said they've been holding her for 3 days.
So that lady said naked too, but
that's how you say naked down there.
Must be.
So,
but you know, again, like you said, what a shock.
Oh yeah.
That must have been for this lady.
3 days.
But the strange thing about this is that police officers were already en route to David Parker Ray's house.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think what had happened was Cynthia had tried to call 911, but wasn't able to do anything with it.
Okay.
But it must have connected
enough to generate them having to go out and see what it was about.
Yeah. So they were already on their way to his place. And when they get the call over the radio to go here, which I'm sure this mobile home wasn't that far from Ray's place.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they get Cynthia and she tells them everything, and they're able to go and question both David Parker Ray and Cindy Hendy. Ultimately, they arrest them on, you know, some kidnapping charge. But while they're being questioned, they're trying to get out of it, right? Yep, Ray and Hendy. And their claim is that they abducted Cynthia Vigil, but the reason that they did it is because they were trying to help her get off of her heroin addiction.
Mm. So he was being a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good Samaritan, right?
Yeah, doing you all a favor.
It's like a forced rehab.
Yeah.
But that didn't last too long because it didn't take the police officers very long to find the toy box.
Right.
And once they did, they discovered all the crazy stuff that we've already talked about, the sex toys, and this is where they find the fake police badge. I guess he's keeping it in the toy box.
So they find that and the tapes and the videos?
Yeah, they find all of that. And so at that point, they're able to charge both Parker and Hendy with 12 different charges ranging from kidnapping to assault and probably a few other things,
rape and
in between.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of clips here that I want to play in a row because they all kind of go together.
Okay.
The first two are the actual Cynthia, the real Cynthia Vigil. So let me play that.
Scared me to death what I went through. One morning I was walking to a restaurant and this guy came up to me and told me that he had asked for me. So I went over there and he acted like a cop and told me I was under arrest. And he put his handcuffs on me and he had me in his trailer and he drove me to Elk and Butte. And he did a lot of sick stuff. At the time, I was scared that they were gonna catch me. I didn't know where I was gonna go. I didn't know where I was at. But it was relief. He disgusted me. He was a very sick man and just the way he talked. It wasn't like it didn't feel like this was the first time. It looked like, just felt like he knew what he was doing and I was never gonna be able to see my family again. If I didn't get away, I wouldn't have my three wonderful boys I have today. I wouldn't be here right now asking people for help for these women. Because what I went through, and these families deserve to have these people to know what happened. And these people need to be returned to their families, whether they're gone or not. They didn't have to go through what I went through, but they did. And they probably didn't make it like I did. Just to help these families, because my family would have probably been going through the same thing if I didn't get away.
So, Gibby, obviously, this is a press conference. You can hear all the
pictures,
snapping of the pictures. Also, what you can hear is a lot of rustling of paper.
Yeah.
And that is Cynthia. Basically, what she has is a lot of pictures of missing women.
Oh, okay.
And the other thing is that you could tell is this press conference occurred much later, because she's talking about the fact that she's got three kids now and
right.
She wouldn't have had those.
But, you know, even though it was 3 years late, not 3 years later, but after three kids, substantial amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what year it happened.
Yeah. But still so vivid.
You can tell that it's just for her, the courage it must have taken for her to even talk about it.
Yeah.
You can tell that it haunts her.
Absolutely.
Today.
It's so, like she's still living it.
Yeah. So one thing I took from it was the fact that she said she knew in her heart that David Parker Ray knew what he was doing. This wasn't a first time thing.
Right.
She even knew that, and that he had done it many, many times before. Now I want to play a second clip because it kind of delves into that as well.
One time she said that she would kill me like others had been if he got off on me. And at one time he said that Daisy was okay, so I would.
So just a small clip, but the reason why I wanted to play that is because, and when she said she's talking about Cindy.
Right.
Cindy Hendy, and basically talking about how others had been killed before her, but that she would be all right if she did this, this, and this.
Yeah, as long as you played along,
yeah,
you're going to be okay.
So I think, you know, like I said, very small clip, but I liked it because it's basically her saying or her knowing that other people had been killed before her.
Right.
Not just kidnapped and tortured, but killed as well. And then this third one I'm going to play is from the police.
Cynthia said that she was on a bed in a kind of an expanded trailer house. She was naked. She was handcuffed and she had a collar around her neck, which was attached to a pole. She was given a bucket for a toilet. She was sexually assaulted. She was repeatedly sexually assaulted. She was under the impression she was going to be killed, so she was desperate to get out. Once they go inside the house, they find where Cynthia had been held in the sunken living room area. They see the bed, they see the pole, there's some chains and manacles there. There's a bucket with her waist on the floor. The There was obvious signs of a struggle and disarray in the room. Obviously, what they saw did not look like the area of somebody who had been kept there voluntarily. Everything that they were seeing did nothing for them except to add evidence and corroboration to what Cynthia, their victim, was telling them. There was medical equipment and everywhere. Drills, modified drills with sexual devices on them and cages. I mean, it was just this unbelievable looking den. This was a torture chamber.
So that's obviously after the police get in, they're into the toy box, and they're, you know, he's describing what they saw. Some of the same things that we said, it just, you know, sounds so much better coming from the police, I guess.
Yeah. Still disturbing.
Yeah, very disturbing. So this is not the end of the investigation, though. That part continues, and evidence of more victims starts to come out.
Sure, as this makes the headlines.
Yes. That causes some people to come forward, whether it was they were afraid before or whether it was they were drugged, and this coming out in the news kind of sparked, or that's not the right word, but
it generated,
generated memories. I don't know the answer to which one that is, but a woman named Angelica comes forward, and she's telling the cops that she had been abducted by Ray about a month before Cynthia. And this one was a little strange because apparently she knew David Parker Ray and she knew Cindy Hendy.
Okay.
Knew them both.
All right.
And was going over to their place to get some cake mix.
Okay.
So she knew them, they knew her, and they're sitting there talking in whatever place Ray has. I don't know if it's a house or whatever. But they're sitting there talking, and Ray leaves for a minute, and he comes back, and he has a knife. And straight away, he tells Angelica that she's going to be kidnapped. And at the same time, he looks over, and Hendy's holding a gun aimed at her. They grab her. They strip her naked, and they harnessed her to the table.
Okay.
So basically the same thing.
Same thing.
I think they're...
That's their MO.
Their MO is pretty much the same, as I understand it. They put the metal collar on her. And now in this one, and I think you mentioned this early on, but they had a generator.
They did.
In the toy box. And with Angelica, they used the generator to attach electrodes to her breasts.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing some kind of sick game, or whatever you want to call it, of sending electrical charges,
right,
to different parts of her body. And they abused her for the same, about 3 days. That seemed to be their part of what their MO was too.
Right.
It was about 3 days. Now what happens with Angelica though is, you know, again, like I said, she knew these people.
Yeah.
And somehow she's able to talk them into letting her go on day 4. And so they put her in the car, they drive her however many miles away, and they dump her on the side of the highway. A police officer comes by, picks her up. And this is where I start to get really pissed off, because Angelica reports to the police in very, very detailed way everything that's happened to her. She knows David Parker Ray's name. She knows Cindy Hendy's name.
Yeah.
She knows where they live. And she's telling them that these two people kidnapped me and tortured and abused me for 3 days. So the police take her statement and they file a report. But apparently they never followed up on it.
They didn't.
At all. And that just pisses me off.
Because I think they didn't believe her story.
Right.
They just didn't find it believable.
But they can't take the time to send one guy out?
You would think.
To to Ray's house and at least say,
yeah,
hey, you know, what's going on? Can I check this trailer?
Yeah, just take it half an hour to drive out there, check it out, make sure, and then, you know.
Or just ask him some questions. I don't know.
Yeah, just
I don't know.
Yeah, just to see if he acts strange.
Yeah, obviously, he could have said no. You can't see the trailer. There's all kinds of different things. But the fact that they did nothing, that just really rubs me the wrong way.
Right.
Because basically, if they would have followed up on this, it couldn't have saved anybody before Angelica. But we know for a fact it could have saved what Cynthia went through.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there was anybody between in that month between Angelica and Cynthia or not. But bottom line is Cynthia would possibly not have had to go through what she went through.
Yeah. But I think you find that it's, you're going to find the theme a little bit, you know, that it happens to a couple of women that the police just don't believe their story.
Right. So, we are going to talk about some other.
I mean, if someone told you this, you would be like, I mean, maybe not today, but back then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it'd be tough to swallow, to understand what they're trying to say happened to them. It's just so bizarre. How believable could it be?
It would be, but as a police agency.
Oh, would you not have
the responsibility to at least check it out?
I would think you would. I would hope.
I see, and we're going to see it probably later on, but to just dismiss these people's claims because of, and I don't know anything about Angelica. I don't know
maybe she had a background.
Right. I don't know what her past was.
Yeah. That made them say, here comes this crazy person or whatever.
Yeah. I definitely don't want to say that because I don't know, but you're right. Maybe there was something there that caused them to dismiss
it.
But the bottom line is that they possibly could have stopped him a little earlier. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. Now, one thing that they find in Ray's possessions is a video of another victim named Kelly Garrett or Kelly Van Cleve. I saw it a couple different ways. One of them's probably her maiden name and married name. But this video dated back to 1996. So they ultimately find Garrett or Kelly. And she's in Colorado alive. And police were able to identify her through some tattoo, I think, that she had on her ankle. Kelly would later testify that she'd gotten in a fight with her husband and she was playing pool at a bar with friends. And this was July 24th, 1996. And it was David Parker Ray's daughter, Jessie, who we haven't talked about. We did say he had a couple of daughters, but
right.
One of his daughters' name is Jessie, was there. And they were friends. Jessie and Kelly were friends. And so they're drinking beer and playing pool at this bar.
The bar was called the Blue Water Saloon. The daughter puts a roofie in Garrett's beer that she was drinking. So then they walk outside, and Ray's out there. He comes up from behind and hits her in the head and knocks her out.
All right, so Ray hits Kelly, right? Kelly Garrett from behind, knocks her out.
You got it.
But we know Jessie was the one that lured made her. It all happen.
Yeah.
So, Gibby, Ray takes Kelly back to his trailer or his toy box. And again, goes through this whole putting the collar on, a leash or chains, and basically his whole MO. And Kelly wakes up, but she blacks out a bunch of times over what I think's a couple of days of torture.
From the roofies.
I think he did this a lot. I don't know if it was always roofie, but like I said, he had a cocktail.
Yeah.
And this cocktail was designed to keep the victims kind of semi-conscious.
In a cloudy mindset. And but
he thought it would also, like I said, cause amnesia.
Yeah.
And he was hoping that would be beneficial, for him.
I bet.
In the long run. So Kelly's drugged.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, and I don't know if you have this, but Ray decides to slash her throat. And I don't know what the reason was, if she made him mad or,
Well, in his tape, he tells him that he won't hesitate at all to slash your throat. So clearly she did something that got upset with, and he slashed her throat.
Yeah, you're right. He did say that. Yeah. So if she did something that was against the rules, that's possibly what could have precipitated it.
So he slashes her throat and he thinks she's dead.
And he takes her and dumps her on the side of the road.
Yeah.
But she's not dead. Somebody finds her. They take her to the hospital and she's treated and survives. The problem is she tells the story just like Angelica.
Right.
And nobody believes her.
No, not even her husband.
Right. It's not only the police didn't believe her own husband didn't believe her.
Not only does she go through this 2-3 days of pure torture and someone slices her neck and throws her out for dead, her own husband doesn't believe her. It actually divorces her over it.
Because he thinks she's been cheating on him.
Yeah.
And this is when she, after he divorces her, this is when she relocates to Colorado.
Right.
So let's listen to Kelly.
We always ended up here. No matter where we started, this is where we quit. There used to be a little mini bar sitting here. Pool tables right there. And we were playing pool, and I had ordered a beer. And I left to take one of my drunk friends home. And came back, and some of my other friends left. And at the end of the evening, it was just me and Jessie. Jessie Ray, David's daughter. I just remember being on her couch. Her dad's couch. That's when they held the knife to my throat. I put the dog collar on, the duct tape, the handcuffs. And I ended up tied to a table.
She survives and is able to tell her story.
Yeah.
But again, like we talked about with some others, I mean, that's got to be haunting.
Sure.
For her. I don't know how often she relives that. you know, she went through a serious, serious ordeal.
She probably relives it every day.
I wouldn't doubt it at all.
I don't know how you'd get that out of your head.
Besides Kelly, and that's horrible what happened to her, one of the crazy things about this is, so we know Parker's been doing this, and we know Cindy Hendy, his girlfriend, has been helping him, and now he's got his own daughter.
Yeah.
Somehow, to help him in his
sick little fantasy world.
Yeah, in his sick fetish.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it. I can't believe that.
But it's true.
It is true. We know it's true. And we'll find out even more about why we know it's true.
Right.
I've talked a couple times about this drug cocktail. And I think it was on one of the tapes. And I don't know if you remember this or not, Gibby. I didn't listen to all the tapes. But I did have this written down that on one of the tapes, he described the drugs as a combination of sodium pentothal and phenobarbital.
That's it.
Is one of those? I thought sodium pentothal was truth serum.
It is.
Oh, okay.
So it must have a mixture.
So putting the two together. But like we said, he thought it would cause amnesia. And one of the fascinating parts about that is there was a woman, unnamed, they didn't give her name, but she was uncertain of whether or not she was abused.
She just thought it was bad dreams, right?
Yeah. She thought she was having these really weird nightmares.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the FBI came knocking on her door and started telling her what they were there to talk about.
Oh, did they see her in one of the tapes?
No. I think they were, I don't know what caused them to question her.
But somehow they got her information.
But once they start talking about this, she realizes, hey, these are not nightmares. I actually went through this. And she's able to, you know, after talking with the FBI, to actually give them a bunch of details.
Yeah.
So hopefully we didn't just give out some crazy recipe for a budding serial killer, but
yeah.
Apparently, I mean, this is all over the internet. It's not like we're saying stuff that people can't look up, but apparently this did work, at least in
for him
this instance.
Right.
Because she was not sure whether she had really gone through something. And actually, I think she was leaning towards the fact that she hadn't.
Yeah.
And was just having some bad dreams.
But of course we know it wasn't.
No, wasn't a bad dream. She was kidnapped and tortured like the others.
Yeah, she lived through it.
So, Gibbs, I think we're probably close to getting into the trial, but we've got to talk a little bit more about Cindy Hendy, because I think she's a fascinating part of this whole case.
Yeah.
And I know we've just kind of touched on the fact that she participated in some of the crimes and helped out David Parker Ray.
Yeah.
So Cindy was from Seattle. And what I have is that she'd moved to New Mexico because she was wanted for forgery, theft, and drug possession. So she was trying to avoid arrest by, you know, getting out of the Seattle area. It came to light later that Cindy had told one of her friends that she had participated in these attacks that Ray committed and the torture and all of that. And what she said was that there were also 4 to 6 people that were killed. So she had the same friend she told that to. Not only killed, but dismembered and tossed into Elephant Butte Lake.
Okay.
Now, I don't think it's any big shock that when it came time getting close to the trial, she wanted to cut a deal.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So she was willing to, you know, roll over against Ray and others for a reduced sentence. So she provided details of Ray's alleged murders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alleged because they never actually convicted him, but you got a lot of people talking about him.
Right.
And she said it was probably 14.
It was enough to have the FBI search his property.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Enough. And for, and the lake, I think they tried to do some stuff at the lake as well.
I mean, they have like 80 to 100 FBI agents out in that area searching.
So she says 14, but I'm thinking that's probably only the ones that she knew about. You know, how much activity did David Parker Ray do before he even met her?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know the
answer.
What
did he do on
his
own? What did he do with other people assisting him?
Right. By all accounts, he started at a pretty young age.
Yeah.
Because he was 59 years old when they caught him. And there were some accounts that he'd been doing this for maybe 30 to 40 years. You know, he could have started as young as 19, 20 years old. So she told police that Ray had killed a business partner named Billy Bowers, whose murder up to that point had been completely unsolved. Nobody knew, had any information on it. So Cindy was the one that was able to link Ray with that. And what she had said was that Ray dumped the body in this lake, but it come back up to the surface. And Cindy said it was at this point that Ray learned that he had to open up the stomachs of his future victims so that when he dumped them in the lake, they wouldn't come back up. They'd stay submerged.
They wouldn't blow up and float.
Right. So that's pretty detailed information.
It is really detailed information.
To make up.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think she was making this up.
I don't think so either.
I think she was trying to cut a deal, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think she had some pertinent information and was able to give that to police. But like you said, they sent hundreds of agents out to his property, I think to the lake even. They searched all, you know, this area around his property. They never found one human remain.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, is like a huge mystery in this case.
It is, because you'd think they'd be able to find something, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure they sent divers into the lake and...
Yeah, and, I don't know how big...
Or dragged it or something.
I don't know how big Elephant Butte Lake is. I mean, it could be very... Yeah. It could be one of those very deep lakes.
I don't know. I don't know either. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, for him to kill whatever the number is, whether it's 14 or 40 or 60... To be able to do it in a way where no body has ever been found.
Right.
You know, he knew what he was doing, I guess. I'll say it that way.
Because I believe there's victims, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely. So I've got a little audio bite from a detective I want to play.
He was a predator, and he was a very good one, a very intelligent one. We're convinced that there are remains. It's just a matter of locating them. David was very familiar with that lake, and he worked as a mechanic for the state parks. He also had made comments in the past that we know about the best way to dispose of a human body in a body of water such as Elephant Butte Lake. Cover them with chicken wire or barbed wire, weight them with cinder blocks or other heavy weights, and sink them to the bottom of in the deepest part of the lake.
So there again, you know, he's talking about the lake. I wish he'd have said how deep the lake was.
Right.
I know somebody's going to look it up and say it's...
Yeah, somebody will let you know.
It's X, but, right. You know, can't research everything, I guess. But like we said, Hendy is such a central figure in this case, and she would go on to tell the police everything she knew about Ray's daughter, Jessie, as well. And that whole episode that we talked about. And also another accomplice that I don't think we've mentioned yet by the name of Roy Yancey. And both Jessie and Roy were implicated in the murder of a woman named Marie Parker. And I think Marie was Roy's ex-girlfriend or ex-wife.
Yeah.
And it was a similar situation to the Kelly Garrett incident that we talked about. You know, it happened in a bar. Jessie and Roy somehow got Marie out of the bar.
Yes. So for the listeners, he goes by Roy, but his real name was Dennis.
Yeah. Dennis Roy Yancey.
Yeah. But Roy is what he went by. Yeah.
So they get, you know, much like Kelly, they get Marie in handcuffs and they get her in the car and they get her back to the toy box.
Right.
You know, we keep saying this, but Marie was tortured for 3 days. I don't know why this 3 days pops up a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if David Parker Ray, you know, got tired of these victims after 3 days.
Maybe he did. Maybe that's where it's just he did everything he wanted to do and he's done.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I don't even want to think about it. It's too sick. But obviously there's something about 3 days because that's it can't be a coincidence that right. it keeps coming up over and over. So she's tortured for 3 days. And then Ray and Jesse come to Roy Yancey. And they say they're done with her. So again, Jesse's pretty involved in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they give Roy a rope and they tell him to strangle Marie. And he ultimately admits that that's what he did.
Yeah.
So let me play a little clip on that. This is, it starts out with police questioning David Parker Ray. And then it morphs into Roy Yancey.
You ever heard of a woman named Marie Parker?
Not really, no.
She's a woman that disappeared about 2 years ago. And I just thought I'd ask, you know, since I had the opportunity, I'd ask if you had any information that you could provide me with that.
And she's the one that disappeared from one of the bars?
Yes, sir.
I don't think about that. I know of the incident, that's all.
You were a part of that by chance?
No, certainly not.
From what I understand is that he's had many years of kidnapping, torturing, and killing women.
How did you come up with the idea to kill Marie?
That was David Ray Parker's idea. I know they ended up giving me a rope and telling me to strangle her. And she wasn't dying fast enough.
Okay, but you said she wasn't dying fast enough. Was she struggling, or?
Yeah, she was struggling. I was told not to tell anybody anything or I was going to be killed and thrown in the ditch.
And who told you that?
David.
So David Parker Ray is basically telling the police he doesn't know anything about it.
Right.
And then Roy Yancey admits to the murder and says that, you know, he was told to do it by Ray. So all of this happens and Jesse Ray is arrested and charged with kidnapping on April 26, 1999. Roy Yancey was arrested a little bit earlier and charged on suspicion of murder April 10th, 1999. All right, Gibby, I think we have to start talking about the trials now. And Ray has a couple of trials. And his first trial begins on March 28th, 2000. Something happens right after jury selection of this first trial, and it's that Ray suffers a heart attack, and so the trial has to be postponed.
Okay.
Now, one thing that happens, you know, between this time and I believe that the time that they start the new trial is one of the key witnesses dies. Angelica dies of a drug overdose. So that really only leaves, I believe, Cynthia V. Hill and Kelly Garrett as the main surviving witnesses. Okay. for the prosecution. The new trial starts on May 23rd. They finally start. They've completed jury selection. And at this point, Ray is charged with 12 counts of kidnapping, sexual abuse, and conspiracy. But the trial doesn't really last very long because in July, the judge declares a mistrial because at this point, the jury cannot agree on a verdict. And this is where, I guess for me, Gibby, it gets very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand what's going on because what is said is that not all of the jurors were persuaded that the testifying victims, so to me, that means Cynthia and Kelly,
right,
had been held against their will. I don't know what the hell they thought. Did they think that they willingly went to the toy box and
put a collar on?
Yeah, put the collar on themselves and said, hey, you know, please torture me for 3 days. I don't get that.
I don't either.
But, you know, of course, we weren't in the courtroom. We didn't hear all the evidence. But that stood out to me as strange. But either way, there's a retrial. And this happens in November. But again, you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff happening with these trials.
Right.
Because it's really just a couple of days into this new trial that the judge dies.
Yeah.
So they have to postpone the new trial. And so that's November. They don't start up again until April of the next year. But this time, I think they get it right.
Yeah.
And they convict Ray on all 12 charges. Again, I go back to that first one. I don't understand it. I don't know what they thought. I mean, we heard both victims.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I had sound bites of both victims.
Right.
I don't know what their pasts are. I don't know what the defense brought up in to try to discredit them, which we know happens a lot.
Right.
It's kind of sad, but the defense always has to try to discredit the victims. But I can't imagine that they were able to do so in a way that people thought
these girls got what they deserved.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get it.
It's like they asked for it, is the way a couple of those jurors made it sound.
Yeah. I won't belabor the point, but it does strike me as very strange. But anyway, you know, another jury convicts him, but he's still got to go through a second trial. And that starts up in June. Now, in this one, he makes a plea bargain before the second trial.
Right.
And the reason that he does is for his daughter, Jessie, because she's implicated. She's charged. So he makes a plea bargain basically saying that he'll plead guilty, which I don't know why he wouldn't. He's already been convicted. But he'll plead guilty in this trial in exchange for a lighter sentence for his daughter, Jessie.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray was convicted, or what, he pled guilty. So ultimately he gets like 224 years in prison.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that was from the first one and how much of that was from the second one, but you know, he was convicted of a bunch of different offenses, all revolving around abduction and sexual torture of, you know, these young women. So again, we talk about craziness, right, in these trials. The trials are over, and it's May 28th of 2002. David Parker Ray is getting ready to be transferred to prison. So I assume up until this point, he's been in some kind of either county jail or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But he's getting ready to go to big boy prison.
Yeah.
And he suffers another heart attack and he dies. So he never even makes it to prison.
Never gets to taste the medicine.
No. Now that he's dead, it almost makes the case dead. Nobody's found. He can't divulge any other information, right?
Right.
He'll never be able to. No other victims were identified, and they were never able to put any of the other suspicious deaths that they thought maybe were related to him. They could never officially link those to David Parker Ray.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because it does, because if there are other victims out there, you know, their families maybe could get some closure.
Yeah.
By linking and being able to officially say that something happened to them at the hands of David Parker Ray. So right. I shouldn't say that it doesn't matter at all, because it does. Now, something happens in November of 2002 that I thought was really interesting. And this was that the police actually opened the toy box to the public.
That's weird.
They allowed the public to tour David Parker Ray's toy box.
Really?
And the thought was, is that it was believed that it may lead to more surviving victims coming forward.
Hmm.
But that's strange.
That is strange.
That me or you or Joe Public could go. I don't know if there was a limit to who could. It says the public.
Yeah. I don't know about that move there, but.
But I don't know what, if anything, came out of it. I don't, as far to my knowledge, nothing came out of that.
Right.
So we jump forward to October of 2011, and the FBI, I don't know, on some type of tip, they performed a search of a place called McRae Canyon, which was near this Elephant Butte Lake, which from everything I read, people think that's where he disposed of bodies.
Yeah.
And they're looking for potential victims. They don't find anything. In February of 2012, the Australian Federal Police contact the FBI about a potential victim known only by the first name Connie. And apparently Connie had been mentioned in a letter from a man named Mark that was postmarked from Sydney, but it was found in David Parker Ray's residence after his arrest. I don't know whatever became of it, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was corresponding with other people that had similar interests.
Right.
You know, we've heard about that before with, you know, the internet.
Right.
And some of these different crazy fetish forums, but I don't know if he was doing some correspondence through mail or what. But as far as I know, they were never able to get any more information on this woman that was named in the letter. So let's wrap it up by talking about some of the other people involved and what happened to them. So we had Roy Yancey. He was convicted in the strangulation murder of Marie Parker, and he received 2 15-year sentences to run consecutively. He didn't serve all that.
He didn't.
Which I thought was a little strange. You know, he was paroled in 2010, and he only served 11 years. That seems pretty light.
Yeah.
To me. I mean, I think there are people in prison on drug-related charges that have done more time than that. And here's a confessed killer.
Yeah.
That strangled a woman.
But he didn't stay out very long.
No. No,
he's only out for a few months.
Yeah, it was what, 3 months?
Yeah.
He got charged with some type of violation of his probation.
Yeah.
And so he's back in custody, and now he has to serve the full sentence. I think it's
2021.
Yeah, 2021.
Yeah, so he'll be out in...
Which is actually only 4 years away, if you think about it.
Pretty soon. So when he listens to this, he can shoot you an email and give you any important details we missed.
Yeah, I really hope some of these people don't have podcasts in jail.
So that's what happened to Roy.
Okay, so then we have Cindy Hendy.
Yeah.
She got a reduced sentence for her role, but it was 36 years.
So 36 years with a potential parole, I'm guessing?
Yeah. You know, obviously what that tells me, Gibbs, is that they had a shitload of evidence on her.
Yeah.
Because she rolled on all these people.
And still had 36
years. And still got 36 years.
Yeah.
So she participated in a lot of the bad stuff that happened. That's what that tells me. You want to talk about Jesse?
Yeah. Yeah. His daughter, Jesse, she got, you know, because he plead bargain, right?
Right.
So he did the plea bargain. So because of that, she got 9 years, leaving 5 to be served on a probation basis. So she definitely got off on the light end compared to the rest of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and obviously she's out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She has to be out now.
Yeah. She's listening to this, and she'll be sending you an email.
Correcting.
Yes.
I can live with an email. As long as that's all it is.
Yeah.
All right, Gibby. So to wrap up this story of David Parker Ray, a.k.a. the Toy Box Killer. I mean, obviously, one of the sicker individuals that we've covered.
Disturbing.
I mean, I don't think, you know, if you can try all you want, but you never be able to get into this guy's head.
No.
And figure out what made him tick.
I'm telling you, if you want to freak yourself out, go out there and read the transcript. Try to sleep after that.
Yeah, not only can you read it yourself, but there are some people on YouTube that have read the whole transcript.
Yeah.
In either their normal voice or some freaky voice.
Yeah, some creepy.
And that'll creep you out even more.
Yeah.
But the you know, and obviously what we're talking about is the transcript of the tape that David Parker Ray made and basically played for every victim. And it is what you heard times 100.
Yeah.
I mean, I cut out.
Just listen to it.
Yeah.
Lay on your couch, close your eyes, listen to it, and tell me if it doesn't freak you out.
Yeah, it freaked me out. And that's why I kind of cut it down a little bit. I didn't want to, you know, play the full bore, nasty, nasty version.
Yeah.
We figure we'll leave that up to people if they...
Disturbing anyway.
If they want to get that. So that's it for episode 16, In the Bag.
Yeah, make sure you jump over and listen to our Unsolved.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Unsolved's cranking up. We got episode 6 would be coming out at the exact same time as this. So make sure you, if you haven't given it a listen, give it a try. Subscribe, rate us on iTunes. Like we've said, it's basically the same format. We just pick unsolved cases and talk about the case. We talk about all the different suspects. You know, sometimes we go down a bunch of different rabbit holes.
Yeah, can't help that.
Because there's a lot more rabbit holes in these unsolved cases. Sure. Yeah, give it a try. All right, so for Mike Ferguson.
And Gibby.
Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.